Welcome, everybody, to episode 354 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, May 29th, 2019. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Jay Tripp.
Hello.
Hello, John.
Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
How are you?
How are you doing, sir? Hey, don't ask me the same question I'm asking you.
Well, I think our answer is both the same. We're wet and rainy and gross and dreary.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the appropriate term here now, it's not even June, but it's swamp ass weather.
Oof.
So that's what it's been like here.
I don't need to hear about that condition, but I will agree that our yard is a hot mess.
I'm testing the boundaries of what we could say on this form of media.
Yes, you are. Anyway, it's terrible, though. It's just it won't stop raining. It's relentless. It's
in my backyard, like a nature preserve.
Carrie and I have made that joke. Also, we have chipmunks that are swarming the property. Birds are swarming. We've got lots of mud puddles all over the place for everything. Everything outside is enjoying it much more than we are.
So before we get started today, I want to send a shout out to Robert Carnes, who is a listener of the show. Robert, I saw your email. Unfortunately, what happens is that I use Google's Gmail. I forward things through Gmail, but I actually use Thunderbird, the client. Yes, I use an email client on my desktop.
You and Matt are the last two people on the planet.
That's right. And what happens is some of the messages that shouldn't be spam get lodged up in the spam, and that includes contact form, email submissions, and new comments and new post notifications.
Oh, no.
Emails I'm supposed to get from WordPress get labeled as spam, and then I don't see them in my inbox. But so I was going through the spam, or actually I was going through the contact form submissions, because they are saved into the database on the website if you use the Jetpack contact form module. And I saw your email, and he was appreciative. And he was telling me a little bit about his story of how he's been dealing with mental health issues, and how some of the people in his family have also come down the road with mental health issues. And he appreciated me sharing a little bit about what I've been going through and listening to my story. And he says, keep up the good work. And he loves enjoying. He enjoys the show. So I just wanted to shout out to Robert. And, hey, I got your email. So the big news today, this came out earlier, but Pantheon has acquired SitePilot.
Is SitePilot a thing? We're all gonna Google SitePilot.
When I wrote the article today, I started it in WordPress. In the title, I said SitePilot, and I knew I got it wrong. It's Staging Pilot. So there's like four times I've messed that up already. So Pantheon has acquired Staging Pilot, and essentially what Staging Pilot is, it's founded by Nathan Tyler and his brother Phil, and I think it's been around for about 4 years. But what it does is it automates over 2 million test steps that would otherwise be done by humans every month. It performs this automated testing, regression testing on updates within WordPress, and it's able to determine with these visual snapshots whether an update has caused an error or something doesn't look right. Maybe CSS is messed up on the website. It's actually able to detect these things and prevent a website update from actually going through. And it notifies you with this report of things that it detected, things you should take notice of, things you should fix. So what they're going to end up doing is eventually taking this technology and taking Nathan and his brother, absorbing them into Pantheon, and Pantheon's going to have this really cool automated setup regression testing that will be already on top of a lot of the awesome other stuff they already have, and as far as spinning up staging sites and deployments and all the other cool sort of DevOps stuff that they already have. So this is a great sort of acquisition for Pantheon and for its customers. And congrats to Nathan. And this is one of those things where, I don't keep a super close eye on the hosting space, but this acquisition, when I had a meeting with Josh Koning, the co-founder and head of product at Pantheon yesterday, this was the first time I've ever heard of Staging Pilot. Not the first time I've heard of regression testing using snapshots, because at first I was familiar with that from Liquid Web. They do something similar like that. This is all because we talk about how one of the One of the things that we haven't been quite able to solve to make automatic updating WordPress just happen across the board, not just with minor updates, but for all updates, whether it's themes, plugins, and everything, is getting rid of that factor of, well, I need to be there. I need to check this on a staging site before I can implement these changes into the live site, because I need to see what changes. And the beauty of what Staging Pilot does is it does all of this stuff and it's automated and you don't have to manage the tests.
Right. This is one of those tools that will eventually, like, every hosting company will have to have some version of this. But it's Pantheon's making a big investment and a big step. The thing that I think is kind of the neatest thing about Staging Pilot is the visual test results between like changes or between versions. They pretty much just have a drag and drop, like a diff tool left to right, where you just see what it was and what it is now, and you get to visually identify what the changes are between versions or between updates. So not just for WordPress itself, like WP Admin WordPress, but like your theme, your edits, the things that you're making between what I'm assuming Pantheon will use this for, will be like staging, pre-production, and production sites. But this is one of those tools that every host is gonna, they're gonna want after this. They're gonna scurry to build, just like the chipmunks in our yard are doing right now. They're gonna be scurrying to build something similar to this, because it just makes total sense.
So now Pantheon has this. I don't know what GoDaddy uses. I don't know what WP Engine uses. I know, especially WP Engine, they have staging sites. So I'm not sure if they have any kind of regression testing in place for WordPress updates. But this what Staging Pilot does, like I said, you know, the key is automation. They're using AI. There's all these automatic steps. It's performing all these different tests. And instead of managing tests, it's automated. You just get the reports. And then it makes it a hell of a lot easier for you to manage updates on multiple sites, you know, between 20, if you're managing 20 to 100 websites, instead of having to do all those things manually or going through them, this makes it a heck of a lot easier. So it's a great value add for existing Pantheon customers and for Pantheon the service going forward.
Totally. It's awesome.
So congrats to both Josh and Nathan. It looks like a great relationship there. Happy Sweet 16. WordPress turned 16 years old. So it's been about 16 years now since Matt Mulliweg and Mike Little forked B2, or the Cafe Log blogging platform, which is the nucleus at the very center of what WordPress started off as. And the first official release was back on May 27, 2003. Which actually came with a new admin interface, manual excerpts, intelligent line breaks, a link manager, and was compliant with HTML 1.1 standards. And let me tell you, I remember back in those days where if you had something that's like strict HTML or XHTML standards, it was a big deal.
It was a big deal.
Now you put it in, you don't even see a mention. I mean, why?
Because there are no standards anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
The standards are out the window. They are gone forever. Oh, look, you included a screen, or Sarah included the screenshot in the of that original release in Void. Is it? I don't know about you, but it makes me long for simpler times.
It's really just a couple text boxes, a little bit of a header, your drop down arrows. I mean, it's. Looks pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
I mean, in retrospect, other than some polish and some colors and some font changes, it's not too far off from what we have now.
You know, it's interesting seeing the post password box so prominently displayed in this screenshot. Title, category, post status, comments, open, closed, pings, open, closed, and then post password. Those are like the most important features and things, which, like, you know, when you think about it back then is like, I don't know, a password-protected blog post was kind of cool 16 years ago. You have some content you don't want everyone to see, but you can hand them a key to get in and see it. That was a nice feature to have back then.
And to think about the simpler times, how about this? At the very top of the WordPress admin bar, you had these links. You had post edit, you had team, options, categories, template, manage links, my profile, view site, and log out. That's all you had. That was everything that was inside WordPress.
Yep.
Boy, how far we've come.
Yeah. Links are gone. Team is users.
I mean, we've got so many admin menus, you need to have a collapse and expand bar to expand or hide them if you want. We got menus on the top. We got menus on the side.
Mm-hmm. But you made a good point, though, that the 16 years, it hasn't changed as much as a lot of other pieces of software have changed in 16 years. Definitely stuck to its roots, what it's been good at. So there's something there.
So about 16 years later, the software is used in more than 200 different languages. Of course, 33.9, almost 34% of the top 10 million websites as reported by W3 Techs. And it's pretty cool. As usual, there are Sarah Gooding did a good job of highlighting some birthday cakes that people took photos of. People were celebrating WordPress's birthday all over the world. And even Bluehost did this little bit of a promotional video where they were asking people what they like about WordPress and contributing to open source, which I thought was neat. And another year goes by of WordPress development. Sweet 16.
It's eligible to operate a motor vehicle now.
So I'll ask you this. So the birthday of WordPress, we look at it as May 27, 2003. Mm-hmm. But I guess I'd go along with that. Maybe the genesis of WordPress would be that the comment of where Mike Little commented on Matt Mulloway's The Blogging Dilemma blog post where he says, sure. Hey, if you want to fork this, I'm right there with you. And that seems to me, maybe that to me is like the genesis of WordPress.
Yeah.
But the first release of WordPress, I guess, would be its birthday.
I think so, too. I think that's fair. Like the first release is like the first time that anyone gets to really use it for real.
Yeah. So it's like, this thing actually exists now.
Yep. But we talked about this, I think, every year since then, but it's just a fork of another piece of software, right? That was abandoned. So this again is my reminder. If there are plugins out there or code out there that doesn't seem like it's really going anywhere anymore, or like the maintainers have disappeared, or you have different ideas for a direction that something should go, the easiest thing to do is fork the repo and make it something else. The harder part, which I think like Matt and others have spent the past 16 years doing, is growing the platform, selling it to people to use it, to make it popular. It's easy to fork it, and everyone should fork something if they want to take it their own direction. But all the hard work that goes into making it to 33%+ of the web is just insane. It's
what would you know about forking, John? Other than that presentation you did for
for LoopConf.
LoopConf,
in Salt Lake City.
That's right. You're in front of a fireplace. It was such a great presentation. It was so warm and gave me fuzzy feelings.
Oh, no, that was Word Sesh. I think maybe I think it was Word Sesh. Talks. Yeah, it was Word Sesh.
Word Sesh is what it was. Yeah. So Daniel Gelcut, he operates on a website, bitsplitting.org, and he published his experience of contributing to WordPress, and unfortunately, it was not a good one. He describes in his post called Unlove Patches that he's admired the WordPress project for a long time, and his admiration for the project has diminished a bit in the past 7 months because he hasn't succeeded in contributing to it. He describes that he's heard a lot of reports from his customers that dates were being set wrong in posts to WordPress. The issue is that if you have a draft post on WordPress, changing its status to published doesn't update the published date from the time the draft was originally saved. And I think I've run into this a few times over the years. And so he says that he did the hard work of not only diagnosing the problem in WordPress's source code, but also writing a fix and writing unit tests to confirm the fix. He found a bug with a patch that will fix the problem for his customers and any other clients of the WordPress API. He then links to the ticket and track with the patch. He says that he then went to WordPress Slack to see what could be done to have his fixes integrated. He had a positive response from a couple members of the team, and it seemed like his bug fix was being fast-tracked or slated for integration. Time passed. It's been about 7 months now since he's been able to check in with the press corps team, and now he's getting met with radio silence. Basically, it's fallen through the cracks, even though it has a patch and unit tests and things are confirmed for the patch. So he doesn't know what really is going to happen, but he says that he says you can't coddle every contributor. Some submissions will be bogus, but his was a clear fix to a defect that affects multiple clients of the API. If it's not a clear fix, I'm at least owed an explanation for why it hasn't been committed after 7 months, in his humble opinion.
I'm looking at it now, and my first, like, and I just skimmed the track issue, like his details of it. It's a I love when you can tell that, like, developers know how to file a bug report, like the verbiage, the direction, the test case. Like, this probably Chris Coyer from CSS Tricks has like a limited, what is it called, a reduced test case. There's a whole, like, almost a white paper basically that he wrote about how do you reduce this down to the exact reproducible thing. And so that's really what he did, and has unit tests and a patch and everything here. And then it kind of just evaporated. There was just nothing else really happened afterwards. So my one and only real disclaimer with bugs is that anything that touches dates and times is really risky to change. And then, like, the publish date, I always think is interesting, because when do you want it to show that it was published? Is it the exact minute that it transitions from, like, draft to publish? Does it flip the date then? Or does it keep the original date from when you started drafting the post? Like, I could see wanting both. Or is that a use case for having it stamped in the revision? It's dates and times are weird, and, like, when to flip the bit and why. Someone might want it to be one way and someone might want it to be the other. My guess, though, with an issue like this is just there's not enough people have recognized the problem or really understand the problem or are exposed to the problem in order to get enough momentum to actually have someone stand behind it to commit it and fix it.
Well,
because there's really crickets down here. There's not a lot of
the track ticket changed from future release to 5.1. Then it was punted to 5.2. Then it was punted to 5.3. And I don't know. It just keeps getting punted.
Then that's that was like what Matt talked about at the State of the Word last year. And that was when some folks tried to do some dramatic cleanup. And then that got reversed because it was like thousands of tickets that just continued to get punted down the line. And like, I don't know exactly what the best solution is to that other than the direction that WordPress is sort of going right now, which is having more committers and having more people with more eyes fixing more and more issues. There's another issue that's similarly that some folks that do a WordPress email list that I subscribe to had commented on. So Alex and Ben had commented on a different track ticket that I think they were maybe involved with, and it's a similar experience, except this one was from 3 years ago, and there are like a dozen, maybe two dozen patches, but kind of a similar experience of like, well, it's punted from 4.8 to 4.9 to like four different versions of 4.9 and on and on and on and on and on. But like, I don't know, this is like the problem and the solution. Like, it's good that there's activity and that it keeps getting moved, because it means that like someone is in fact paying attention and touching it. It's not just completely being ignored in the abyss of track issues that there are out there. But at the same time, a lot of these we need more people to, it's like the security team. Like, we just need more trusted bodies and more people, to put their stamp of approval on stuff and then just get it committed and go from there. But
so I guess my advice to Daniel would be that to keep an eye on the Make Core WordPress blogs, because every now and then in these releases that I've seen lately, there's usually a post that says, hey, are there any bugs that we should be looking at or track tickets that you'd like to see included in this release? And I would say to Daniel to keep trying to get more focus onto your ticket in each release, especially right after a version is released, try and get involved in the discussion for what should be in the next release, and just throw your ticket out there, whether it's in the Slack channel or in a comment of one of those blog posts. But you have to be a very for some of these things, especially one-offs, like in this situation, you have to be a very strong ambassador over time, and you have to have that energy and care enough about it for what could be months or even years, as we saw with the cryptography digital signatures. We saw that eventually added to Core. You got to somehow find that energy and maintain that passion before you just say the hell with it. And, you know, if it ever gets committed, it gets committed. But I don't have the time or patience to put up with this anymore. Which is what happens to a lot of people.
It's one of those things that, like we talked about last week, where it really does echo like real life change. If you want to see something be better where you live, you have to speak up.
Be the change you want to see.
It's right. I mean, it's a little cliche, but you have to show up at like the meetings, or you have to talk to the right people in the right times to get the roads paved where you live, or to fix a street light where you live, or whatever else. Part of it is just getting in contact with either the right individual some days. But then also, like, on the flip side of the coin, and like, not to open a whole other can of worms on the show today, but like, the hardest part about building software really is the maintenance side of it. It is the hardest part about real life infrastructure also, like utility poles, manholes, like whatever it is. Putting new stuff in is pretty straightforward. Like building a new a feature in software, like the site health check, it's a lot of work went into it. Or like Gutenberg, obviously, a lot of work goes into it, but it is easier to create a new thing than it is to change a line of code that has been the way that it's been for 10 or 12 or 15 years. And so it's not an excuse, but it is just a reminder that like even small changes that you don't think are really going to have that many negative consequences, even with unit tests, even with everything else and what you think are all of your bases covered, a lot of the times changing that old code is going to break something for somebody. In worst case scenario, it breaks it for a lot of people. Like, you know, one simple change in the grading of your yard might cause a flood in your basement. And it was the right thing to do was to change your yard that way, or to change something, your driveway, whatever. But it impacts something else down the ride that, or down the line that you might not otherwise know of. And it's the same thing with code. You change one line, and all of a sudden drafts that change to publish for XML or RPC work one way, and then they don't work a different way in the REST API or whatever else. Like, even if it's broken right now, at least it's broken in a way that most people are familiar with, instead of like, I don't know. It's weird.
Well, if WordPress development was happening on GitHub, that we could use their new sponsors tool, we can actually pay somebody to put the patch into WordPress.
The sponsors tool is pretty cool. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but I did apply. Not that, like, of all the people in the world to try and test the thing, I don't really consider myself to be like really one of those people that they're going to give it to. But I think it would be fun to try it. And it's you joke, but it wouldn't hurt maybe to have something like that.
And so GitHub has launched a new sponsors tool that allows open source developers to receive financial support. The program is rolling out slowly, and as you can imagine, there's a wait list with open source contributors and maintainers on that list. For the first year developers are in the program, GitHub will cover all the payment processing fees and has pledged to match all contributions up to $5,000. And by the way, this article is written by Sarah Gooding at WP Tavern. She reports that individual developers participating in the program can customize the funding options displayed when potential supporters click on the sponsor button. They can also add links to other popular funding services such as Open Collective, Community Bridge, Tidelift, Ko-Fi, and Patreon. And open source projects can also specify funding models for contributors by adding a GitHub funding.yml file to the project's master branch. So this all sounds well and good, but there's been some criticisms from both sides describing what this could turn into. Basically, there's some people who've been quoted saying, you know, why haven't you fixed my issue yet? I sent you $10. I demand you honor my obligations here. I paid you. Welcome to Small Donation Open Source 2019. And John, we've talked about this earlier this year, it may have been last year, about how do we come up with a solution to pay open source contributors with and finding that balance of not having that influence what they're spending their time on in the project. And this looks to be a sort of experiment or a way to try to do that, but it could very easily, I mean, we're already starting to see some developers in the program listing in the reward section that they will prioritize their issues if they sponsor them with cash.
I mean, it's totally... like GitHub is.
You want this fixed? You pay me. Everybody else? Sorry.
I mean, it kind of is crass, I guess, to position it like that. But the reality, unfortunately, is that is generally what makes the world go round. So. How you as a open source developer or contributor position this or word this is becomes pretty important. And GitHub, this is them making a move to try and build into or integrate into the existing UI and audience of millions of people that are using and relying on GitHub to gracefully include links and nudges and suggestions on how to compensate people for their work. It should be beta, and it should probably be in beta for a really long time so that they can make sure to get it right, because there are a million ways that this could go very wrong. Like some of the Basecamp folks mentioned and others, like it could go that way, but I don't think that will be the majority of people that will see it that way or that will use it that way. And there will probably be some rock star that's able to say it that way, you know, F you pay me, right? Like there will be people that are able to be that way, that will have an audience that will follow them and it will work for them. But I don't think that works for everybody. And I don't think that's the way to take this. Well,
I think it's neat that within GitHub, within the workflow, like, if I report an issue or I'm having a bug and it's very annoying and that developer somehow finds a fix or implements a problem that solves it for me, and if I can click a sponsor thing and maybe give them a few bucks for it because, hey, it's really nice now that this is fixed. It's really been bothering me. And I think it's nice that I have that ability to do now as a user.
Yep, I agree. Coming. It's coming for some people, not for everyone, but it's coming eventually.
And one of the big differences between, you know, Open Collective is mentioned in here as a competitor, but Open Collective funds projects while sponsors funds individual maintainers. That's a big difference. So there's that. We'll see if John gets on the list, and you know, next thing, once John becomes can be sponsored on GitHub, we'll start pimping that at the end of the show. You know, when we ask him where he could be followed, and he's going to come on here. If he'll be able to watch the show, he'll just start slamming dollar bills, you know, out of his hands. And hey, look, baby, open source,
dozens of dollars, right?
Dozens of dollars.
Yeah, if you're lucky, dozens of dollars.
This could get me a few cappuccinos from Starbucks.
if I drink coffee anymore, yeah. I started having decaf again, but I think the best that anyone can hope for is that anyone backs them, period. And that's it. Mm-hmm. Like anything is better than nothing. I don't know that there will be a ton of people that will be making a full-time salary this way. That there might be some projects like Vue or whatever that have everyone's attention that maybe this would work for. But I don't think this is going to be paying a lot of bills for most people.
I mean, it's sort of like having the donation button on WordPress.org for your plugins, where right. It's there. You have the ability to send some, donate some cash to a plugin developer for a plugin. And what have we learned over the years? Almost no plugin developer mm-hmm. makes a living based on those donations. It's just mm-hmm. something that's there for the people who want to give money that way.
So that part of that is a cultural problem where, generally speaking, I think the expectation is that plugins are free, or they are you're paying for support with a pro license or something like that. Donations really aren't there's no driving force behind them. There's a link. There's literally a link in the plugin page. It's not really...
it's not prominent. It's there, mm-hmm. and the plugin developer has to add it there.
Yep, and then we, as a you know, a universe of users, we don't really make a point to talk about donations or to draw them out as a real revenue stream or a source of funding for the code that gets written. Like, they're not revealed really within WP admin or the plugins pages. They're not revealed within the add plugins page if you're adding something new. They don't show up in the plugin details if you're looking at the iframe that shows up within WordPress admin. Like, they're not, you have to code that into your plugin, and then usually when folks do it, it ends up being a little bit more obtrusive or naggy, or an admin notice that kind of just gets shoved aside anyhow. So, like, this is why I think it's really important that GitHub gets this right.
Well, you know, and we talk about this, and how can WordPress do something similar or make things easier to generate income for developers to generate income within the software? And I, you know, that seems to be a little bit of a slippery slope, because I don't know if I want those type of marketplace things put into core mm-hmm. that would make it easier for a lot of other developers to make money. I mean, I'm not against them making money or generating income. I just don't know if mm-hmm. I want that in the core software that I'm using.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's
because I wouldn't use it. I don't need it. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a really tricky problem to solve because of the economics behind it. Like, what makes somebody or their output more valuable than somebody else? And that comparison is impossible to not make, unfortunately. When you see what it is that someone else is able to achieve or what they've done with whatever their level of effort was, everyone instantly kind of compares to try and figure out, like, what they can do differently, what they can improve, what they've done wrong, whatever else. And so, like, if people are in it for the money, like if that is the thing that drives them, and I think that is probably a motivating factor a little bit for most people. It might not be the thing, but it helps. It does not hurt to be financially comfortable, whatever that is, and whatever that means. But like, if I agree, if WordPress had more of these links more in our faces, depends on how it's implemented and would it Would it help or hurt? And once you move that link, like we said in the show about like putting ads in places, this is kind of an ad. Like having a link to donate is kind of an ask. You're asking someone to give you something, to give you money, to give you business, to give you attention in a way that isn't super just organic support. Like you're asking them to look or pay you. And that means you have to provide pretty immense value, or need at least enough value for them to feel like it's worth paying. It's just a lot that goes into it. You know
who doesn't have to worry about money? Press. Because
that was a good segue.
Yeah, Press and its flagship WooCommerce subscription product has been acquired by Automattic, along with Press's. I say that 20 times fast. Along with their 20 employees, they will also be joining Automattic to continue developing and supporting their products. Currently, there is no timeline for any immediate big changes that's going to happen within these products, which is usually always the case when these things happen. But over time, the subscriptions products and the other things that they have will be integrated perhaps into WooCommerce itself. The acquisition also includes Automate Woo, a marketing automation tool, and Robot Ninja, which offers automated checkout testing for WooCommerce stores. So if you combine that plus with the subscriptions product, which has made Brett Shepard pretty successful over the years, these are really, really good substantial enhancements to the WooCommerce product. Over the years, and I enjoy these stats that Sarah Gooding brought up about, she says that Press has been deeply invested in the WooCommerce open source project for many years, and WooCommerce has 834 contributors, and Shepard is currently among the top 10, and his company committed to the Five for the Future initiative last year by sponsoring one of its employees to contribute full-time to WooCommerce Core. And for the past 5 years, Shepard has also co-organized the WooCommerce San Francisco meetup. So Shepard has been everything you could want in terms of a contributor to WooCommerce. So Brian Krausgaard over on PostStat has had a pretty good write-up in his opinions on this acquisition. And apparently this may give Automattic a chance to make a big play to Shopify, which I believe forces people to use third-party solutions for subscriptions. So there you go. So congrats to Brent and his team. And you know, it's interesting. In his personal blog post, he always believed that Automattic would be a dream job that he would love to have. And you know, 10 years later, there he is. He's gotten acquired by Automattic, and now he's going to be an automatician.
They built a lot of cool stuff to get there, like automation testing, just like staging pilot. Like they've written a lot of code. They've built a lot of neat things, and it pays off. The hard work, the volunteering, doing the work and doing what you love generally pays off, and it did for them. It's a good fit, I think.
Press. All right, see, I'm getting better at this.
You are getting better at this.
For all our listeners out there, it's a little, say it three times fast. See if you can do it. There's a lot of
I think you have to say it three times slowly. You say it fast, you're going to say other words that aren't correct.
Prosperous. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, and it's a whole play on prosperous, but it works. And I like that hit a meeting right there. Prosperous. So congrats to the team. Let's see. Is there anything else that's making the rounds that you'd want to mention or bring up today, John?
Not really. I mean, I'm happy we talked about the Pantheon acquisition, because that was something that I know that just happened recently. So it's good to fit that in the show today. I'm trying to think. I mean, there's like more and more like WordPress releases, point releases happening. Work is happening steadily on 5.3. But other than that, I don't think there's a ton of details. WordCamp Europe's coming up for me. That's pretty exciting.
It's about 2 or 3 weeks now. WordCamp EU, a lot of stuff that's going to be happening at WordCamp EU. As far as guests are concerned, I'm working on getting Jill Binder to talk about her work with inclusivity and diversity. I tentatively penciled her in for July 3rd. There's going to actually probably be some big announcements, maybe even a blog post that's made about her work somewhere around the WordCamp EU time period. I'm working on getting Dan Mabion, the founder of WP and Up, a mental health and well-being organization, get him on perhaps at the end of the month, and also get Johnny Harris on the show pretty soon here to talk about his contributions too. He's working on multi-site, white screen of death protection, and he would also like to talk about WordPress and governance, which I think would be a neat conversation. And speaking of that, I think it's almost time to bring Morten Rand Hendrickson on and Rachel Sherry back on the show to give us kind of an update on what's happening over there with that project.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the GitHub security policy stuff too, but I don't have the link to their post handy. So you'd have to hear it paraphrased from me, which nobody really wants to hear.
All right. So before we wrap up the show, I do have a mini rant. I'd like to say. So
This is my favorite part of the show. We don't do this very much anymore.
It's not really a big deal. I mean, it's just more of annoying to me. But I've noticed that I appreciate large fonts or larger fonts than what we've had in the past few years on the webinar web pages. But lately I've noticed that I actually have to hold control and turn my mouse wheel down and go down to about 90 to 80% of what the web page's size is for the text to not be so in my face. Mm-hmm. And there's just more and more websites and WordPress themes, and it just seems to be a natural trend to have larger text, which, yes, is easier to read, but I just get so annoyed when it seems to be so in my face that I have to shrink it so it's not, I don't know, it's some weird thing that drives me nuts about having text that's too large.
Yeah,
what's going on, but a lot of my sites now that I browse are down to 80 to 90%. Like Twitter is a big one. Like on my MacBook Pro, when I'm viewing it on Firefox, it has to be at 80% or else everything is just too damn big.
Yeah. So on iOS, I've always turned the system font size all the way down, like to the smallest that it could be to fit more of it on the screen. And then I don't know what version of iOS that it was, if it was just 11 or if it was 10. There's like so many versions and UI changes now that I like have a hard time remembering when stuff gets put in. But now they have that like chunky app header title, like here in the settings app, and it says settings really big, and it takes up like the top, I don't know, inch or the top like 10th or 8th of the screen. And then when you scroll up, it like fades in and it does this little thing where it gets small and then it gets big again, whatever else. But like I wonder who that's for. Like who forgets what application that they're in enough where they like have to have it be so prominently displayed and big in every app like that. It just seems like kind of a waste of space. Like it must work. It must be something that people want or that improves cognition or something. There must be something to it, but I generally agree that I like my code font to be like maybe a touch bigger than usually what everything else is. But otherwise, it's either way too big or like way too small.
I like font that's around 12 to 14, but depending on other elements on the page, 14 could be just too much.
Right. Like it's weird. I don't know. I mean, it is the web in general kind of has lots of goofy trends, but you can follow the even WordPress themes around, and you look at the latest 2019 theme, and it is a very big, solid title area, big, a very large H1 relatively large single column content area.
Headings you can't miss.
Right, basically, right. Like that's the time period of design that we're in with the web and apps and things. But I'm kind of ready for that to go away and for, I don't know, something else to take its place.
I do enjoy the fact that My size settings for specific websites appear to be saved in my browser. So if I visit Twitter, it goes down to 80%. If I visit a particular web page, no, it goes to the last known percentage I was using for that website. So that's pretty neat. So I'm enjoying that.
What I really like the way that the new CSS Tricks website, like since they redesigned it, css-tricks.com. Y'all probably already for sure have been to this website and know what it is and everything, but like it is fun and it kind of takes advantage of the big chunky header in a way that I think makes sense and makes it feel like the type of title that it's supposed to be, like an important in your face kind of title, but then it's just like a miniature version of a card layout with the avatar, the author's name, the links to go start commenting on it. But then it's like very designed, like very intentionally. There's lots of interactive elements on the cards. They animate, they move, they transition.
Would you expect like anything less from CSS Tricks?
I wouldn't. But the thing that I think I like about it is that it is like a combination of the old and the new, right? It's still very content, very user, very author focused on writing. But then it's still very intentionally and nicely designed. Like if you scroll up to the very top, the CSX, the logo spins around with momentum kind of it. Whee! It does a little spin around move. Like there's all these little touches that, you can tell somebody took the time to really think about why it's there and what it does. And, you just don't see that level of finish or polish on a lot of websites and WordPress themes these days. There's a lot of design elements and polish on the CSX Tricks website that makes it feel fun to use and keeps you kind of engaged. That has the finishing touches that most WordPress themes just don't come with.
No, we need to get, I should get Chris Coyer on the show. That'd be fun.
Have you had Chris on the show yet?
I don't think we've had Chris on the show. I think he's still doing a Shop Talk podcast all about front-end web design development work.
Oh, for sure. He's been doing that for a long time.
Pretty good show there. So other than that, I think we're about done here.
I guess. I don't know. I feel like I don't want the show to end today. But I guess you're probably right. It's probably over.
This is probably the done. Show that has to end. It will not go on. It. All right. Never mind. So you can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on WPTavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, JEFFR0. And you can follow John on his GitHub account. Sponsor him. I'm going to sponsor him. No, not yet.
Please don't. No, please don't. It's okay. I wish that like the sponsorship thing, like, the only reason to do it is to like help other people. It's not to like buy me coffee. It's so that I can buy other people coffee when we go out places. I don't know. Like, I wish there was a way to do it in a way that it benefited other people and not just directly. I don't know. It just doesn't feel right to benefit a person like that. But that's just me. Find me on GitHub somewhere. Find me at jjj.blog. I guess that's it. I guess the show's over now.
That's the show. It's so sad. So. Hope everybody enjoyed your holiday, your extended 3-day weekend last weekend. If you had a chance to do that, I found it very nice. You know, you go back to work for one day, the next day, hey, it's hump day. So we're already on our way towards this weekend. It's going to be a good weekend.
Maybe that's what it is. It feels like a Tuesday.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a little weird.
We cruised through the topics this week too. Went right through those.
Huh. Right, like a hot knife through butter.
I guess.
Oh, man. Oh, we I'm hungry. Is it lunchtime? Yeah, I think it's lunchtime.
There was all a right. corn and brat roast over here this past Sunday.
Stop. And, you know, stop.
Corn on the cob, dip it in the butter, covered in salt.
All right, everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. God, I'm starving. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. Say bye, John, for the love of God.
Bye, John. Bye.